Welcome to the Raging Rhino Podcast. This is podcast number 100. My name is John. Well, let me tell you something. Let me tell you so. This could be the one thing that you really need to know. You gotta stop once in a while. Shake off that face of yours. Believe it or not, these strings will eventually connect. I'm about to do something I've never done before in this podcast. I'll explain why it took so long later, but if you listened to my appearance on the Blatcast a few months back, reviewing the Justice League movie, this is not news. I've opened every podcast the same way. You just heard it. There's the welcome, the podcast number, and then my name. My first name. Only. Never my last name. My name is John Nolan. And I'm nobody. I'm not related to anyone famous. I don't know anyone famous. I'm barely known to anyone outside my small circle of family, friends, co-workers, and neighbors. Appearing on the Blatcast is the most public thing I've ever done. If you search deep enough through archive footage from local news networks, you'll see me talking about a cop who was shot less than 100 feet from my apartment, and another time doing a very poor imitation of Michael Keaton as Batman. Other than that, I'm just a chubby, middle-aged guy in San Antonio, Texas. The most interesting story I have about my life is how I got out of New Orleans hours before the edge of Katrina hit. And even that is not the most interesting story in my household. Gina, my wife, used to work for a man who was convicted of murder. See? Wouldn't you rather hear that story right now? Too bad. She doesn't have a podcast. In fact, I can't think of a single damn interesting thing that happened to me until Gina and I got together. To be honest, she makes my life worth living. Those are some of the basics about me. More later. But there's a specific reason why this podcast began. About 9 years ago, this time of year, I got laid off from work. You remember 2008 and 2009, right? Stimulus packages, one under Bush and a second under Obama. Hundreds of billions of dollars designed to save and create jobs. And the mega corporation that I worked for got $3 billion of that stimulus. They didn't even qualify for it originally. They told us they had to change a piece of the business, some part of it in Utah or Colorado or something, so that they could get the money from the government. $3 billion to save and create jobs coming to our company. Isn't that great? It was great publicity for the CEO having dinner with the new president in the White House. It wasn't great for the 11,000 employees that mega corporation laid off in the 4 months after taking the money designed to save and create jobs. There's still an emotional scar, which is why, to this day, I refuse to use any American Express products. I was pretty rudderless until Gina and I got together. The job was my means of contributing to build a life for us. And, to dig the knife a little deeper, just a few months before the layoff, I had finally gotten the promotion that I had worked on and been passed over for years. I didn't realize how much I had made my job my identity until I lost it. through no fault of my own other than being on the wrong part of the depth chart at the wrong time, I was again rudderless. I felt like a total failure. But I still had the hope and confidence that I could quickly turn around to another job, just like the one I had before. And a few months later, that arrogance was gone. Gina and I had prepared in case something bad happened, so in the time I was out of work, we barely touched our savings. When I was not on the job hunt, I did my best to be a house husband, so that she had to do as little as possible when she got home from work. I would go grocery shopping on weekday mornings when hardly anybody else was there, and I'd listen to podcasts on my brand new iPod Classic, a present I finally bought myself for my promotion about a month before getting laid off. One particular morning, at the grocery store, as I grabbed a basket and plugged in my earphones, I dialed up an interview from the Dennis Miller Show, produced by Christian Blatt of the Blattcast. I told you the strings would get connected. Unfortunately, I had a computer glitch a few years ago, and I lost all my old Dennis Miller interviews. And I really wish I still had it so I could get the exact words. This particular interview was Andrew Breitbart and Larry O'Connor. And they were talking about the inception of the Breitbart website and how they wanted a place where they could just be themselves and cuss and have fun. And I heard that and I thought to myself, I'd like to be able to do that. And then I thought, why couldn't I? I had been discovering podcasts. People were doing whatever they wanted on them. Why couldn't I do a podcast? And so it began. I had a tech guru friend who initially offered to host my podcast, but after talking it over, he suggested my own site. So I registered a domain with GoDaddy, and on March 15th, 2010, the first episode of the Raging Rhino podcast was published, along with a brief zero episode, kind of outlining the idea of the show. There's a couple of patterns you might notice from each episode. I don't use musical intros or outros, even though I'd like to. Part of that has to do with, well, not being entirely sure how to splice it in, but more so, I just don't like using things without permission. I know some douchebag musicians insist certain people not use their music, and I just don't want to get into something like that. I close every episode the same way. The "You'll Hear From Me Again" line was inspired by an early episode of Frasier, where he comes up with "I'm listening" as his catchphrase. The closing is to let everybody know I still got more to say. When I was writing the first podcast, I had this idea to use a famous quote that sets the tone or uses a word or phrase that goes with the theme of what I'm trying to say. And somewhere along the way, those opening quotes became song lyrics, and they just stayed that way. I always thought it'd be nice if somebody recognized some of the more obscure stuff I use. By the way, this podcast lyrics come from one of my all-time favorite songs, and I really wish they had a karaoke version so I could sing it. So, why Raging Rhino? Well, rhinos are my favorite kind of wild animal. I have a collection of a few dozen rhino figurines made of various materials that started out as vacation purchases, but blossomed into gifts from friends and family. Gina is getting a little sick of it, especially after the 12-pound marble rhino I purchased in New Orleans a couple years ago. On the website and in my Twitter bio, you'll see the G-rated description, burly, surly, thick-skinned. Rhinos, for the most part, tend to be lone creatures, generally amiable unless you harass them or do something to set them off on a tirade. Then they'll go at it. These are qualities I relate to. And of course, we all know about the tough rhino skin. Shit that puts others into a tizzy bounces right off of me. There's also a PG-13 rated description I use privately, which I also believe are accurate characteristics of rhinos and me. Big, ugly, horny. Let's be honest. Rhinos aren't the most handsome or majestic of creatures, and neither am I. And horny? Well, that double entendre we'll get to in a little bit. Where did the raging part come from? Well, I wanted alliteration, and I was angry. Rampaging rhino sounded way too clunky, so raging was the natural choice. Even before I was laid off, I didn't think the stimulus was a good idea. It didn't make any sense to me that the conservatives, who I usually supported back then, were so in favor of the stimulus when Bush was president, but so opposed to it once Obama took over. Or the wars that the left hated under Bush suddenly became acceptable under Obama's continuation. All I knew was people like me are pawns, cannon fodder, and statistics to people like that. I lost my job, and so did a shitload of other good people, while the CEO was making headlines with his White House dinner. I was confused and frustrated, and I wanted a release. But I wanted it to be a constructive release. So I started thinking about why I believe what I believe. I knew leftist ideology didn't work for me, and I began seriously questioning right-wing ideology. The podcast is a way to organize my thoughts. Even though I was publishing it with access to anybody who wanted it, it's always been about me trying to figure out myself, the path that is best for me. I'm a voice, one of over 300 million voices in this country alone. I'm everyone and anyone and no one. That's why I previously only used my first name, because it didn't really matter who I was. It still doesn't. Although it would be nice, I never expected anybody to listen or give me feedback. I'm sure some feedback would be that I have no idea what I'm doing, and that would be completely accurate. I fumbled my way into making this with zero background on how things work. After getting some of the basics down with Audacity, the recording program I use, I started writing podcasts as if I were trying to explain my point of view to somebody else, or as if I was getting into a debate. And if you've been listening to this podcast for some time, you also know I used to be very religious. Sometimes I write podcasts the way I used to write sermons. Oh yes, I preached. I was a deacon. That's also why, after some early lengthy podcasts, I decided to limit the podcast to between 30 and 35 minutes, because who really wants to listen any longer than that to a political opinion? Sometimes I just start writing and see where it takes me, but I'm rarely pleased with those. I think of all the podcasts I've done, I was least happy with the series on the Libertarian Party platform. That's why I abandoned that series and never came back to it, even though it was nice to have Gina work with me on them. I liked my talk about religion because it really helps to explain why leaving religion was one of the best decisions I ever made. I had fun with the Peanuts holiday specials, looking at them with modern societal expectations. I like taking things out of their element and view them through a different prism, just like how I find tidbits of political commentary even when I'm talking about DC movies. Podcast 90 stands out in my mind as a personal favorite, not just because I think the title is fiendishly clever, but because I stared deep into a nihilistic future for this country. I've gone through the full spectrum of emotions doing this podcast for the past 8+ years. Even if it was born of anger and frustration in the beginning. Again, having this outlet has helped me. Sometimes something gets me so worked up, I rant and rave and yell. If I'm going to be angry or frustrated, I want it to be in the podcast and not in any real life interaction with people. It's helped me hone my thoughts, and I think in the long run, it's mellowed me out quite a bit. Even helped me mature. I think if you were to listen to the early podcasts, you'd agree. Most of those early ones are pretty bad, but I will keep them around as long as possible because I don't mind admitting I've made mistakes and errors in judgment. It's been over 8 years now, and those early podcasts show my mind's changed. Very few of my friends have any interest in politics. The few acquaintances I have who are politically active are hardliners to either the right or the left who have no tolerance for other people's opinions. I can't really have conversations with those personalities. I don't even like engaging much in social media. If someone is tolerant enough to hear or read an opposing view, then I may throw in some opinions. But let's be honest. How often are people truly tolerant enough to let you disagree with them these days? Speaking of social media, Twitter is the podcast's only window to the world. There is a Facebook page, but really all that does is link to Twitter and just repost everything from there. I do have a personal Facebook page, and that is strictly for friends and family. I even have an Instagram page, but I keep that as a social media interaction for people I am dating. Yes, for those of you new to this podcast, I did just use dating in the present tense. And yes, I have been happily married for nearly 19 years. As I have mentioned quite often over the years of this podcast, I am bisexual. And Gina and I have an open marriage. I am out of the closet in the sense that I don't hide it. I've had friends find out because they saw a dating profile or heard other people talking. And when we find platonic friends getting close to us, we'll let them know so that they aren't surprised. But it's not like I hand out business cards reading John Nolan, bisexual polyamorous podcaster. While it's certainly a big part of my life, it's not a part of my identity. The same goes for the non-monogamy. And I prefer the term non-monogamy to polyamory. It's a matter of semantics within the lifestyle community. Gina and I realized about 15 years ago that we were basing our marriage off of what society expected of us. So after long discussions and some nervous experimentation, we tried it. And we liked it. And it's been going like that ever since. I'm not saying that I think everybody should be non-monogamous, but I am saying that you should be true to yourself and honest with your partners. Not everybody is meant to be heterosexual. Not everybody is meant to be monogamous. I would bet that a lot of people are denying their desire to be non-monogamous because they're caught up in societal expectations. Hint, they're probably people who cheat in their relationship. I've talked extensively about this in the past. Despite the prejudiced assumptions of society, I love my wife more and more every day, while still dating and occasionally being intimate with other people. Not that such a thing could be truly measured, but I would put the love I have for my wife up against anybody else's and wager all I have that my love is just as strong, if not stronger. All that being said, we chose long ago to have our marriage this way. I do not advocate this for everyone because not everyone is wired, so to speak, for such a relationship. I'm only saying I know it works for us. I couldn't say if it would work for you. Only you can decide that. And that's really the philosophy behind my podcast. I couldn't say what works for you. Only you can decide that. I believe in the ideology of individualism. But hold that tangent until next episode. Since I'm wrapped up in my self-indulgence, let me tell you about some of my favorite things. You never know. You may decide to take me up on some of these recommendations. I've well documented my love for DC Comics characters in all of their forms, beginning with the Super Friends cartoon when I was growing up, continuing with Flash 275, the first comic book I ever got when I was 7 years old, all the way through to today with the DCEU and various television shows. I grew up in the era of infinite universes coexisting as DC, thankfully something they've brought back. So I have no problems with different and/or unusual takes on characters, such as the more pensive and self-doubting Superman in the recent movies, or the police procedural take on Lucifer in his television show. Sometimes those changes work for me. Heath Ledger's Joker in The Dark Knight. Sometimes they're okay, but not great, like Green Lantern. Sometimes they flat out suck, like Catwoman. Some get canceled just as they're hitting their stride and really getting good, like Constantine or Powerless. Regardless, I'm willing to give them a try, even Lego Batman. Comic books and their transitions into other media will likely follow me the rest of my life. I have some favorite television shows. Of course, any DC television show is going to get my attention. Thank you, Arrowverse and Lucifer and Krypton. Mystery Science Theater 3000 is also at the top of that list. You can catch the revival, as well as some of the classic episodes on Netflix right now. I like the revival so far, although Mike Nelson is still my favorite host. And of course, Mike, Bill Corbett, and Kevin Murphy are now doing Riff Tracks, and you should definitely check out their website and their live shows. Archer, which is currently in its 8th season, and Venture Brothers, which will have its 7th season soon, are my favorite animated shows. If you happen to run across any of these canceled shows somewhere, I highly recommend Sherlock, 24, Chuck, Pretender, The Good Guys, or Better Off Ted. No matter how many times I've seen it, I still catch reruns of Good Eats on the Cooking Channel. I love to cook, and sometimes it's actually therapeutic for me. For movies, my favorite is Mystery Science Theater 3000, the movie. It's actually a great starting point for the television show because it sets up the premise really well, and the movie they make fun of is not as god-awful as most of the others they watch. L.A. Story is a severely underrated Steve Martin gem from the early 90s. Bull Durham is my favorite sports movie. Hot Fuzz and Shaun of the Dead from the Cornetto trilogy are exceptionally clever if you pay attention to the dialogue and the details. I also love classic movies, Young Frankenstein, Some Like It Hot, The Apartment, Forbidden Planet, oh my god, that's a great movie, Gandhi, On the Waterfront, Casablanca, and as you know from a couple of months ago, Citizen Kane. Each of these in its own way is brilliant. Oh, yes, Die Hard is a Christmas movie. Yes, Dances with Wolves is a Western. When I was a kid, I loved football and was pretty well versed in the game and statistics. As I grew up, I concerned myself less with the stats and I just enjoyed watching the game. The same goes for other sports. I'm really more into just watching it for fun, and I don't care about all the stats. I grew up a Cowboys fan until they unceremoniously fired Tom Landry. Just goes to show you how old I am. Since then, I haven't had a loyalty to any one team, but if you put a gun to my head and force me to pick one, it's probably going to be the New Orleans Saints. But the NFL isn't even my favorite kind of football anymore. I've fallen in love with Australian football. I'm going to describe it another time, but I highly recommend Googling it or check it out on Fox Soccer Plus on the weekends. They're currently in the middle of their season. My favorite Australian team is the Geelong Cats. Not just because I love cats, but because when I rediscovered the game a few years back, the Cats won 3 championships over the course of 5 years with victories in odd numbered years. This partially coincided with a similar pattern to my hometown and favorite basketball team, the San Antonio Spurs. So I kind of figured that was a sign. The Spurs, of course, have had unprecedented success in the past couple of decades. And yeah, it seems to be finally coming to a close, but man, it's been a blast to watch. Also, previously stated in podcasts past, my favorite baseball team is the Chicago Cubs. A year and a half later, it still feels like that championship is a dream. You would probably think my favorite book would be something like Atlas Shrugged, and that is a very good book. It has flashes of enlightened brilliance and a decent story, but it also drags along at certain points. The Fountainhead is a much more compact story that I prefer with the same message. But my favorite book, one that I am now reading for the 7th time, is Good Omens by Terry Pratchett and Neil Gaiman. It's a delightful little story about Armageddon. See, an angel and a demon that have been on Earth since the creation learn that the end of days has begun, but they decide they'd rather keep it going. Plus, somebody accidentally misplaces the Antichrist. Look, just read it, trust me. My favorite reason to go out is to sing karaoke. 9 times out of 10, I go alone because nobody else I know loves it like I do. I don't think I'm all that good, but I've gotten a lot of positive reactions from people. I once sang a spirited rendition of Suck My Kiss by the Red Hot Chili Peppers, and the crowd loved it. When I got back to my seat, an old man walked up to me and said, "You got chops, my friend, and I should know. I used to play with Stevie Ray Vaughan." I don't know if he was being truthful or not, but that was the nicest compliment anybody ever gave me for my singing. My favorite songs to sing are ones most people don't know or have forgotten. Short Skirt, Long Jacket by Cake, Banditos by Refreshments, Sad Caper by Hootie and the Blowfish, The Voice of Eugenia by Brother Kane. Those last two I usually serenade Gina with when she comes along. My music collection ranges from Mozart to Metallica. But there's nothing I love more than just good time rock and roll. There are certain bands whose music I will buy as soon as it's released or available for pre-order on iTunes. Collective Soul. Yes, they are still around, and their most recent album, I think, is their best ever. Oh, and they take their name from a line in The Fountainhead. See, more strings to connect. The Fratellis, I mentioned them earlier, they are a trio from Scotland who I think deserve to be world famous at this point. Cowboy Mouth, a band from New Orleans who never fail to bring the house down at their concerts. They tour a lot, so if they come to your town, go see them, you won't be disappointed. And The Interrupters, an up-and-coming punk ska band from California whose lead singer has given me inspirations for 2 podcasts. Thank you, Amy. If you follow my Twitter feed, you know I do occasionally post some of the photos I've taken on my vacations with Gina. I have yet to leave North America, but I hope to sooner rather than later. Right now, we're trying to visit all 50 United States. I'm a little over halfway done. If I've been there, I can probably name a good restaurant. Occasionally in future podcasts, I plan to include some stories about my travels. So be sure to check back often if you like that kind of stuff. That's me. The only other big part of my life is my job, but I don't want to talk about that. If you've ever wondered what kind of guy does 100 episodes of a podcast without ever checking to see if anybody listens, now you know. Thank you for listening to my self-indulgence. This is probably something I should have done long ago, but since I'm planning on expanding the scope of the podcast, this episode and the next are the perfect ones to hear. That's called a tease, folks. This is the Raging Rhino Podcast. You'll hear from me again.